This is Indie Book Publishing. Indie Book Publishing is a show about new books and the authors who wrote them. It's an opportunity for prospective readers to hear directly from the writers, to hear what inspired them to write and publish, and to hear all the inside details about their books. And now, Indie Book Publishing.
The title of the book, Menopause or Lunacy? That is the question. And the author is Donna Faye Randall, and Donna joins us now on Indie Book Publishing, and this interview is brought to you by Balboa Press. Hello, Donna.
Hello, Steve.
Great to have you with us. This is not theory. You've been through it.
I think I'm still going through it, but every day I hope it's nearing the end.
Well, it is a very serious part of life for ladies, and we'd have to say for men, wouldn't we?
Yes, I like to say it's a topic that is relevant for women and everyone with whom they connect.
And you've added a lot of humor to it. You've tried to lighten it up in spite of the seriousness of it.
That's right. I guess from my background, my family of origin valued humor for all sorts of things, and I think a spoonful of sugar, you know, helps the medicine go down, and I would say a spoonful of humor certainly helps in many of life's trying times.
Helping us get through the day.
Exactly.
So who is your book aimed at?
My book is aimed at women. Ideally, the women would be introduced to the book at the front end of their menopausal journey, so that they can understand that their menopausal journey has started, and that's why things are changing, and then they could read the book and would have some idea of how it might go for them based on my experience, and how they can, you know, just laugh a little bit more through it and take it easy and not be so panicked, not wondering what the heck is going on.
How did the book come about?
The book came about when I, the exact experience had to do with a very bad banking error. And it was a situation where I was paying off a Visa bill that had got a little out of hand. And I took out a loan to, you know, help everything turn out right. And I very happily was paying down this debt electronically. And when I would go back and check, you know, a day later, a couple of days later, I still had this debt. And I couldn't figure out what the heck had happened. So I ended up calling my local bank branch, and it was a woman of a certain age, as I call menopausal women, who was the manager and I was dealing with, and she determined that I had paid the telephone company, and we're talking about $5,000 here.
Oh,
so I paid
the
phone company an error in my, you know, on my internet banking, and of course they didn't call me and say, you know, are you planning on using a lot of long distance in the near future or something like that? So I had to go back through the banker, and she got it all straightened out. So when it was finished, we were sort of chuckling about the whole thing, and I said, well, that's what happens with we menopausal women. We get a little confused. And she started chuckling. She says, I hear you, sister. So I said, you know, I got a question for you. If I were to write a book with a humorous tone, short scenarios, so crazy menopausal women don't have to read a lot at one sitting, do you think it would sell? And she said, you better get writing, because you bet it will. So that was exactly the situation that where I just went, you know, the light bulb went off. I said, okay, I got to do this. So it started scenario by scenario by scenario. And about 10 years later, it's come to be.
Well, it is a labor of love. That's something that not only you look back on and you can see you could get through it, but your desire to help others, and that's got to be very fulfilling.
Yes, it is. And my my younger brother and I often have said of ourselves that we were put on this earth as a warning to others, because we tend to get ourselves into some crazy situations. And so in a humorous way, again, I guess that's what I hope to be doing, you know, so that some of the chaos I've gone through and made it through to the other side and had some panic, had some laughter, but I'm hoping it can help women. And certainly the feedback so far from those of us, those who have read it, and often they get back to me and say, well, this is exactly what I've been feeling, and I really appreciate that I know that I'm not alone.
How did you pick out the experiences? What was the test that it had to meet for it to be in your book?
That's a good question. Well, I have the book divided into four sections, and they basically deal with the mind chaos, the physical changes, and let me see, you're going to try me on this, the sort of all the emotional trauma, and then sort of getting through the other side. And I had, as you can imagine, I'd written many, many more scenarios, and they were all in these little Word documents on my computer. And so I printed them all out and then sorted them. And since the book was written during over such a long period of time, there was certainly some duplication. And so I, you know, went through, sifted through those, and then some of those I melded into one. Some things just got not tossed, because they're still in a file in case they're needed for speaking engagements or whatever. And I guess for me it was a test of which elements remained riveting, and which I thought would be the most helpful to the readers. So I guess that was my litmus test of how, what would be in there and what wouldn't be. And then I had five women who had been through that process of menopause, and they helped me further figure out, okay, no, you don't really need this one if you have this one, or combine these two, or all the rest of it. So that was a very helpful process.
You have a poem in it.
I do have a poem in it. Actually, I have two poems in it.
Oh, do you? Daily Thoughts of a Menopausal Maniac, a poem.
Yeah. Why not?
Why not? Do you want to read a little of that?
Oh, do I want to read?
Yes.
Actually, I have a little issue with my, no, it's a big issue with my vision right now.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And it's, okay. And interestingly enough, it's connected with menopause.
Really? How does that happen?
Huh. It's, if I can get a little bit off topic here, it's many menopausal women suffer from an affliction called dry eye. Now, not only menopausal women suffer from that affliction, but it seems to be part of the hormonal chaos in our bodies, and often near the end of menopause, that's something that happens. And in my situation, it happened with a vengeance. What a surprise. And also, along with cataracts that have been growing quite a bit. So at this point, I have lots of trouble reading, and I don't know if it's fair to turn the tables and say, would you like to read some of it?
Well, I could. Let me pull it back up here. I just had it open. There it is. It's, again, the title is Daily Thoughts of a Menopausal Maniac, a Poem. Donna writes, oh my, I forlornly cry. Just tell me why I must toil so to get through each day, when so often I just want to die. Well, that just sums it up, doesn't it?
It certainly did at the time, yes.
It certainly did at the time. With glee I see in front of me the bliss with which we live each day in perfect harmony. These ups and downs and grins and frowns reveal I'm out of control, but now I see they are a part of me, this truly pathetic soul. Oh, my goodness. And that's kind of way you feel, don't you, when you're going through it? Just kind of pathetic.
Pathetic, and as you can see, I think what I liked about how the poem turned out was the back and forth. You know, in one,
yes.
I don't know, nth of a second, it seems that I would feel just terrible, as you could hear there, and then all of a sudden, whee, life's wonderful. So if that in itself is quite crazy-making.
So one of your themes, that we need to be kind to those who kind of struggle with this.
Yes. I guess I like the thought of being kind to everyone in
sure.
life. But,
sure.
You know, it's interesting. One of the things that has happened during the course of women's liberation is that early stages, we felt we needed to be like men in order to enter the professional world as, you know, professional women and so on. And I think that was true. We had to do that. And then we got so used to shrugging off women's stuff because we were out there trying to be something different than perhaps we were feeling we were. And so I guess one of the things I was aiming for in the book was to acknowledge, to embrace our femininity, because really you don't get any more female than you know, the ways our bodies go through these situations and help us have babies and all that kind of stuff, and that we need to value our femaleness and all it embraces. So this is sometimes a really difficult part of that, but by being kind to ourselves and then to all the women around us who we suspect might be into this journey and might not know it, it's really key to support one another, I think always, women to women, and then especially during this time of life.
And it's okay to get help from health practitioners.
It most certainly is. One of the dangers is that as we are going further into menopause and seem to have all these things that are happening to us that we knew and not so happy about, is we can tend to say, oh, well, that's just menopause. I don't have to worry about that. It'll change. It'll get better. And sometimes maybe it isn't, quote, just menopause. There might be some underlying health issues that need some attention over and above the menopausal situation. So it's very important to stay connected with all our health practitioners, no matter who they are and what kind of practice they have. And I would say, too, you can look for others that might help in different ways, but if you've got a tried-and-true doctor or naturopath or whoever that has known you before you enter this phase, then, you know, you can see what's changing, what's different, what's just part of the process of going through menopause and then continuing our aging process.
The absolute bottom line, though, is laugh often and laugh loudly with and not at menopausal
That's
women.
Right.
That is the bottom line.
It is. It really helps, you know, the medicine go down. It helps us relate to our sister girlfriends, to share our stories, to know that this too will pass. I so often hear women say, I don't need to read that book. I've been there and done that. And I encourage them to still have a read. You can sit back and have a good laugh. And then you can remember what it was like. And then if you've got women around you, most of us do, who are in that space of life, then you can sort of very keenly remember and help them with your own stories.
We've been listening to Donna Faye Randall, the author of her book, Menopause or Lunacy? That is the question. Donna, what's the best way to get your book?
The best way to get my book, probably more universally, is BalboaPress.com or Amazon.com.ca. And particularly if you're ordering from Canada, you can go through menopauseorlunacy.com and get a very good shipping rate and get your book very quickly. And in that way, I can also, if you want to also email me, if the book is for someone else or for yourself and you want it, a little, you know, signature and so on there, and I'd be happy to do that as well.
Thank you so much, Donna, for joining us on Indie Book Publishing. It's been a pleasure.
It's been my pleasure as well, Steve.
And this interview has been brought to everyone by Balboa Press.
You're listening to Indie Book Publishing, and we'll be right back after these messages. Congratulations on being the proud owner of an adorable, soft, cuddly, sweet-smelling, smiling, cooing, hungry, tired, gassy, screaming little bundle of joy. So now what? Where's the owner's manual for this thing? Where are my instructions? Right here. It's Baby and Toddler Instructions with Blythe Lipman on toginet.com. Infant care specialist Blythe Lipman has worked with babies for over 20 years and works extensively with new parents, providing workshops, in-home visits, tips, and daily phone calls to ease those frazzled nerves. With Baby and Toddler Instructions, you can get the advice you need on how to survive and enjoy your baby's first year. For more information on Blythe and how she can help you, go to babyinstructions.com. From 32 ways to stop a baby from crying to 14 ways to get a baby to eat and so much more. It's Baby and Toddler Instructions with Blythe Lipman on toginet.com. Welcome back to Indie Book Publishing, helping authors publish, promote, and sell their books around the world.
Greetings for Indie Book Publishing, Lulu Press. This is J. Douglas Barker. The book is titled The Iguana Project. And our author who joins me from Dallas, Texas, is Dale Arden. Welcome, sir, to the program.
Glad to be here.
This is a novel. You are a writer of, I would say, technical projects, technical material. This particular book is a step into the fictional area. How long did it take for you to write this? What was your background that caused you to want to write this?
Well, it took me about 3 years from start to finish. I have always been an avid reader of Dan Brown and John Grisham and some other writers along those same lines, you know, like Patterson. And I always had a desire to write a book, and I've had an idea for one bouncing around in my head for many years. And my career required that I travel extensively throughout the United States, through North America, through Europe. And I found myself on airplanes, on extended flights. And, you know, after a while, you got tired of working all the time, got tired of watching movies. And I thought, why not get started writing that novel that had been bouncing around in my head for years? So I got started and started developing a manuscript, and then I became obsessed with writing a book.
Phenomenal.
Every time I was at an airport, I was writing. In hotel rooms, I was writing. And it got to be a lot of fun.
Now, did you start with an outline? You mentioned you have a lot, and I've flown internationally. There's a lot of time on the planes to do either a lot of thinking or a lot of nothing. And did you start with an outline in writing your book, The Iguana Project?
Yes, I did. I actually did some character development. I did an overall outline of the structure of the book, how I was going to write it. And I actually took some time to buy a book on how to write a novel and read that first. That helped a lot. But, I did. I tried to do the whole storyline and outline first. That got me off to a pretty good start.
Is this an adventure novel, or is it more of a mystery? How would you describe it?
It's more of a mystery.
And when you began to write it, you mentioned Dan Brown and other authors who are well known. Was that the same audience that you were trying to reach with your project?
Yes. It is an adult book, you know, even though I think it's designed for adults. not really designed for young readers.
Because of the intensity of the subject matter or the violence, how would you best describe that?
Well, no, there's some romance chapters in there that are more designed for our adult readers. The rest of the book is fine.
All right. And when you began to flesh out the story, a lot of authors will start with a concept, and as they write, they weave into that storyline maybe an ulterior motive, maybe a message. Was there one that you consciously put into the storyline, or was it just the fun of writing and the fun of the story, the adventure?
No, there definitely was an approach to solve some major problems in the United States and possibly other countries with solving the overall, overcrowding of prisons. It also deals with the space program and some scientific research. The basic premise of the Iguana Project was looking at marine iguanas that have some unique characteristics that are going to be applied in NASA for long-term space travel. So those things are intertwined in the book.
You also mentioned something to do with wealth and wealth prosperity. Is that also a theme that goes through your book?
Yes. My main character, Patrick Braydock, is the son of an Irish immigrant and becomes a very wealthy lawyer. And as a result of his early career, he gets mixed up with the mafia. And he finds out later that he's really being manipulated. So he realizes he needs to get out of this mess, and he starts secretly hiding documents that divulge all of the bad dealings that's being done by the mafia. So he starts hiding those in his home safe, and the mafia finds out that he's got that, and they come to try and reclaim those documents. And his wife is caught in this burglary and is brutally murdered. Mm. So the premise from this point forward, Patrick Braydock is off to try and revenge the death of his wife. That's the starting that gets us rolling down this path. How does he revenge the death?
Yes. What is that step, or is that something you can reveal in an interview?
Well, as a result of some vacationing in the Galapagos Islands, he learns of some research being done with the marine iguanas there. And once he finds out this secret, the light comes on and he realizes he now has a solution to his problem, and that's the book unwinds and unfolds how he does this. And it gets all entwined with the government and NASA, space travel, etc.
Bunch of side characters that are interwoven into the storyline. Is there a certain, I don't know, created event or something that came to you in your imagination and in your creativity that will stand out to the reader? Is there one particular scene that you think might be even a movie trailer? Maybe a movie producer might pick up on it.
Well, it's the basic story is how Patrick Braydock revenges his wife's murder, and he comes up with some very creative ideas on how he can capture members of the mafia and put them into a state of suspended animation.
Really?
So once that unfolds in the plot, it gets more and more complex. And then later, this scientific achievement gets uncovered by the government. And then things really go upside down and go off on a lot of different tangents.
You have 290 pages. And I presume from our early conversation, there's a lot of action in this novel.
Yes, there is.
Where does it take place? When does it take place?
It takes place in current time, and a lot of the scenes take place in the Galapagos Islands, in upstate New York, in NASA, and in Huntsville, Alabama.
Interesting.
So it's entwined with the space program. It gets entwined with events in Washington and some of the challenges they have with the finances of the government and the country, and how some of these solutions are brought forward by the solution of Patrick Braydock revenging his wife.
Since my listeners don't really know of Dale Arden, explain to them who you are as far as an author, as far as your motivation, and how you would introduce this storyline to them.
Well, you know, I've been asked that question many times, and, you know, what is your book about? And I try to respond to that very simply by saying it's the story about son of a Irish immigrant who becomes a successful lawyer, whose wife gets brutally murdered, and he comes up with a creative solution to revenge her death. And that sets the stage for the book.
That's encapsulating the storyline. Now, if you were to describe this book or describe it as you have to my listeners, there must be something there that's unique about your book that makes it different from Dan Brown's and other authors in the same genre.
Well, I believe it brings a rather unique, thrilling solution or a different type of plot to the book. It's unlike other books. It really actually brings forward some potential solutions to some of the government's problems in the United States. Although it's up to the reader to decide whether this is something that is serving the greedy politician's desire to make money, or it's really a true solution for the people of the country. And a little background on myself. You had asked earlier, my career was a consultant, and I traveled throughout the world. And as a result of that, I had to write a lot. I was writing procedures, proposals, job descriptions. So I was writing a lot, but I never had a chance to really write something for fun. So this was my chance to get something written for fun.
It's fabulous. Is there any particular character in history or in current novels by other authors that you would like to take place or take the place of or share their adventures?
Well, I mentioned Dan Brown, and I find Dan Brown and John Grisham very exciting readers, very exciting writers, and I enjoy reading their work, and I think that's kind of where I'd like to be, is in those, follow those footsteps of those writers.
And any character that we would recognize in history, like, 007, for example, many guys think, boy, it'd be great to be 007, maybe experience that lifestyle for a week or two. Anybody in that category that you also can relate to?
Well, that's interesting that you asked that, because when I was writing my book, I had some challenges keeping my protagonist, my main character, focused in the book, because many of my minor characters really wanted to come to the forefront. Patrick Braddock has twin sons, and they often wanted to be, it seemed like they wanted to flow into the mainstream of the book. So, I was counseled that said, look, you've got to be thinking about this as a James Bond novel. Your protagonist has to be the main character throughout the entire book, which caused me to go through several rewrites to get him in that position.
That was the challenge that you overcame then in order to make this a completed project.
Right. Absolutely right.
Fantastic. There, you mentioned there are some sub-characters that had an interesting maybe profile. Were those characters that you wanted to take forward perhaps in a sequel or another approach to a fictional work?
Yes, actually, I have been thinking about my next novel and where my book ends, which is a very challenging ending, which really launches the next book. And I can't divulge how that ends, but it's a very exciting, challenging end to the book.
My listeners will want to get in touch with you and find their own personal copy of The Iguana Project, almost 300 pages. Dale, where do they get a copy of The Iguana Project?
Well, first I'd like to thank the audience for listening in. If they're really interested in getting a copy of the book, it's available through my publisher, lulu.com, also through Amazon and Barnes & Noble, both in hardback, softback, and ebook.
And they can also do a search online and maybe in a nice way stalk your writing in the future. Dale Arden, spelled D-A-L-E, last name A-R-D-E-N. They can connect with you through their online resources, get their own book if they choose through a local retailer. If they don't carry it in stock, they can order it. And then look forward to the next edition of something that you are planning and already working on. So thank you again for joining me and sharing your background story.
Hi, thank you.
My pleasure. For Indie Book Publishing, Lulu Press, this is J. Douglas Barker.
You're listening to Indie Book Publishing, and we'll be right back after these messages.
you ever wonder if you're the only woman who runs errands in her yoga pants so it will look like she went to the gym? Or how about the only mom who feeds her kids raw cookie dough? Or are you the only one who cooks her family cold cereal for dinner? Do you need more laughter and less loudness? More self-love and less self-loathing? More joy and less judgment? You're not alone. Come to the living room, a place where we get comfy, candid, and confident together. Come seeking sanctuary and leave feeling renewed. We're saving a seat for you. Give yourself some living room today.
Welcome back to Indie Book Publishing, helping authors publish, promote, and sell their books around the world.
The title of the book, Wisdom and Treasures of the Holy Spirit, and the author is Eleanor Prinz. And Eleanor joins us now on Indie Book Publishing, and this interview is brought to you by Westbow Press. Hello, Eleanor.
Hello.
Great to have you with us. Wisdom and Treasures of the Holy Spirit. Now, how would you sum up your book in general? Where did these stories come from?
Well, actually, there were stories that were accumulated, you know, through the years, and they were so unusual and so inspiring that I felt that, you know, it should be brought out to the public. And but the decline, you know, Christianity is a bit on the decline right now, and therefore I thought there were many facets, you know, of the book and of the of Christianity itself that should be brought forth. Things that people don't really know about and on the whole and are not familiar with. So that is why I wrote the book.
So does the book have a theme, or is it just different kinds of experiences and of yours? And I know your family, you have your mother's experiences and others?
Yes, that's right. It's through the years, the things that I've experienced, and they were so unusual and so very much inspiring, actually, that it would, it would interest the reader in general, and that's why I brought it forth. And also, of course, because of the unusual experiences I had, and I felt that with the healing that I had, which was so, you know, magnificent, that people should know about this and about other things, you know, in general, than in Christianity that are not brought forth, that are not known to the general public.
Well, tell us about your healing.
Well, the healing was very, very humendous. It was actually overwhelming. It was something I did not experience it. You know, I didn't expect it at all, because I came there in a very, very unhappy state of mind, and I thought my mother had just died, and it was very sad, and I thought, oh my goodness, you know, how is this ever going to be touching me? I had septicemia, and I had it for 2 years, and the doctor had told me that there was nothing more that could be done. It was not healing. And a friend of mine took me to a healing service in New York City, and I went there thinking that nothing, you know, was going to happen, that it was so difficult in my case that it would not touch me. But when I went in there, the most amazing thing happened. I was totally taken over by the Holy Order, and the Holy Order totally immersed me and actually threw me on the ground, and I could not move. There was no way that I could possibly move. And I thought, oh my God, how could this be? But anyhow, I was there, I think, for about 20 minutes, and I experienced, you know, the healing light which went through my whole system and touched every particle of my blood, I believe, and my whole being. And It was overwhelming. It was totally overwhelming. And, of course, I was completely conscious. I was aware of what was happening. And then at one point, I heard a rushing sound which came through from the back and pushed right into the inner part of me, which I think was healing the soul as well. And when I got up, I felt, you know, finally when I did get up after about 20 minutes, or I think it could have even been 30 minutes, I went back to my seat and I thought, oh my God, what an amazing thing. And I was aware of the Holy Order of Christ, you know. It was a beautiful, beautiful experience. And when I came out to the car with my friend later, I said to her, you know, if God can do this to me here, how well must he be taking care of, you know, my parents up above? And the next days when I went to the doctor, they informed me that I was completely healed, completely. Everything was healed. My blood was totally clear.
What a wonderful story. Thank you so much, Eleanor. I think often we hear somebody else's story of a healing, and it sounds too good to be true, but it's true. This happened to you.
This happened. Oh, yes, absolutely. Yes, it was amazing because I didn't expect it. I was such a firm believer in the Holy Order. I was always religious ever since I was very little, but I didn't think that God could really heal me. You know, I was so ill, so very ill. And I didn't think that, you know, something like this was going to happen. It's amazing.
Now, your mother had some experiences before she passed away about the other side?
Yes, my mother could see the other side. My mother was able, she was a very busy woman. My parents were very much involved with society on the whole. They had important positions, and they had to accommodate, you know, the public with so many different things that they had to do. My mother was able to, she was a very busy woman, but she was able to see the other side, which was incredible. And she had several experiences in which she saw, people. Well, she would see people sometimes, you know, off and on, whatever is there on the other side. But she saw a friend of ours who had passed on, and she was able to describe her dress and everything and her whole being, you know, when she had talked to her, because she did talk to my mother when she was in state of the spirit, and my mother related that to the family, and it was a beautiful, beautiful true story. She had several stories. My parents also had some other experiences that were quite beautiful and unusual, you know. They were both very, very religious people and very active in life itself.
What about dreams?
Dreams. Well, I think a dream can steer you in the right direction sometimes if, I think it's God's way of talking silently to you. If you have a problem or any difficulty, you can pray about it. And sometimes a dream can evaluate the situation and give you a different point of view that you can tackle it from a different angle if you have a difficult problem, so that you had not thought about it before. And therefore, it would be very beneficial. Dreams, I think, are very beneficial. You know, it can also keep you from going in the wrong direction in your life, for instance. And it can evaluate things on a different level that you had not thought about before yourself, you know, and it's inspired. It's I think God speaks through dreams in many ways.
You have some feelings, some information about the Bermuda Triangle?
Oh, the Bermuda Triangle, yes, yes. Dr. McCall, he's the late Dr. McCall. He was a missionary, and he was a physician, and he was able to evaluate that situation because he was in that area at the time when the Bermuda Triangle was very active and people were disappearing, you know, at a fast rate. And he was there with his wife, And they were shown what the trouble was, you know, in respect to the Bermuda Triangle. I don't want to give out the whole story. It's very involved. But, you know, it's in my book in which he explains where things were involved concerning some years in the past that had happened in that area. And consequently, these things were not prayed over, and they were not, in other words, lifted from this earth plane. Things can happen, traumatic things can happen in certain areas in the world that are very, very detrimental. And therefore, for some reason or rather, they're not alleviated, they're not picked up at a certain area. And that's what he did. He brought it forth to the Church of England, and they prayed over it. They really concentrated on how this was happening and how people were involved in this and how these people were not picked up. Sometimes spirits are not picked up. When you go over to the other side, spirits are not picked up. And if not so, because actually in Christianity, one is usually, you know, taken up by the Holy Order to the place that God has assigned for you to go to. But sometimes they are not, if they are not Christians or if they are involved with pagan, you know, forces and all of that. And this is what it was involved with. It was the pagan, you know, environment and a pagan involvement. And therefore, these things had to be prayed over. And they were. And they were completely alleviated. They had no more incidents after that. And I have a letter in the letter in the book stating this from the Church of England, you know, that they had resolved this problem. They felt that they did in many ways because there were no other incidents after that.
Now, you also talk about what you call the beautiful clearing of the Morris County area that involved George Washington.
Yes. Yes, that was a wonderful thing. Oh, I think that was marvelous. I had come back from England, and my mother and I were here in this area, and while I was walking through the woods and through the areas where George Washington's men had been stationed, I felt a tremendous force of depression, force of sadness, a tremendous deep sadness, as if, you know, the war itself and all of its tragedies were still present in that area. And I had mentioned it to a friend of mine, and she also was aware of this terrible sadness was in this area. And when a friend of mine from England came over, one of the ministers, he asked me, you know, to bring him to that area because I had spoken to him about that. And he evaluated it, you know, from all different angles. We both did, and he immediately, you know, was aware of the tremendous sadness that permeated the whole area. Actually, the whole area here in Morris County was permeated with it. A lot of areas, more so than other areas, but those areas where the men were stationed and where they were housed, you know. And he immediately brought it out to the Episcopalian Church, and the church itself brought forth the Holy Communion, and we did bring it into the Holy Communion, and we cleared the whole area. And immediately after a couple of days, we noticed that the whole territory was an entirely different environment that had come totally, totally released from these very tragic, you know, incidents from the war. And it was beautiful, absolutely beautiful. Several people took part in that.
You've had some tremendous experiences, Eleanor, and your book is titled Wisdom and Treasures of the Holy Spirit. We've been listening to Eleanor Prinz, the author. Tell us, what's the best way to get your book?
Well, the best way would be to look in the internet, and it's under Amazon.com, and it's under Barnes & Noble's. So they can get it from either one of them, and also from the publisher, which is Westbow. they can get it through me, you know. And we sell it, you know, from these different areas. And I suppose you can get it through a bookstore. Any bookstore will order it for you.
Correct. Very good. It's been a real pleasure to have you on Indie Book Publishing. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And this interview has been brought to everyone by Westbo Press.
You've been listening to Indie Book Publishing with your host, Steve Jorgensen. Join us again next week at noon Eastern as Steve interviews another great author.